Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a quick two-game set with the Atlanta Braves down there in Atlanta, losing both games in that set. They now drop to 19-18 on the season. They currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find my handle at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Living the dream, as always. It's getting pretty hot down here. 90 degrees today. It's going to be close to 90 the rest of the week. So summer is officially here in South Carolina. And as far as the Red Sox go, in that Brave series, they were who we thought they were.
Very good way to put it. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure people know by now, but where can everyone find you and our main account on Twitter?
My personal account is at CushmanMLB. The podcast account, which is the busier of the two, is at Bastards_Boston. I have a Facebook-only account for the non-Twitter people, Terry Talks Socks. We have a YouTube channel, which we are very aggressively revamping, and we'll be kind of getting into that here in a second. But search the Bastards of Boston on YouTube, and we're all over the place.
We certainly are. And speaking of that, also with us on the show from Warwick, New York, is Chris Felico. Chris, welcome in. How are you?
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me. I'm doing great. It's getting hot here in New York. Unfortunately, so are the Yankees. And I wish I had better news for the Sox, but I think Terry put it perfectly. Like, they are exactly what we thought they were at this point. So it is what it is.
So living deep in enemy territory, do you wear a bulletproof vest, you know, when you're walking around with a Red Sox ball cap?
I try my best when I'm not strapping myself. However, yeah, it's been a rough going the last 4 or 5 years being a Red Sox fan living in New York, even though for the last 20, it did tip in our favor for a bit. But now we're to a point where we're not even competitive. So goes without saying, it's not fun.
We have another host that lives in Houston. So another, enemy territory.
Well, we're better than the Astros, so we got that going for us.
We are. I'm still thinking they're going to get back in it. And 11 under, I don't know. I just feel like they have to, don't they?
Yeah, 11 under for them, it would be like a game and a half for most teams. Whereas like 11 and a half for us seems like, all right, well, let's prepare for 2026. Not even 2025, like right to 2026.
Right. Yeah, the Nationals were, I think, double digit under the year they won the World Series. In like May or June, they were 10 or 12 under, I want to say. And the Braves were under 500, not by a lot, but by a couple of games in the first or second week of August in 2021. end up winning the World Series. It's all about momentum, you know, if you have it. That's what happened with Texas last year. I kept picking them to lose every round until I think the World Series, but yeah. So Chris was just added to our YouTube team. So we've got three of them doing kind of like a pregame every day, and they're going to talk about the news and nuggets. We try to hold off on starting it until Alex Cora has had his media session, because you find out a lot in terms of injuries, call-ups, what have you, you know, progress reports on certain players that are injured. And also the lineup is out, so we can give some reaction to that. So Chris is one third of that team, and we might be adding another to it. And I'm in the process right now of adding the post-game crew. If you missed the last episode, Nick Face and Brendan Gookin have decided to go their own way, and that was their choice to do it. So so that kind of put me in a position to try to rebuild that crew, and we've got some pretty solid candidates, so hoping to have that finalized by tomorrow. But expect the YouTube channel to be extremely busy. We're probably going to be starting next week live streaming some of it on the Twitter and Instagram accounts. I forgot to mention Instagram. Lori's going to kill me. But check us out there as well. But yes, so Chris is part of that. So what better person to do a spot start for us on the regular show than someone from our crew on YouTube. So here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, great to have you aboard. And I feel bad for you being in enemy territory that often, but you know, I'm sure you can handle it.
I got thick skin.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to have thick skin, and that's the thing. Like, that's who we are as a podcast. We have thick skin. We're willing to just kind of, you know, take the beatings when they come. And certainly the Red Sox got their beatings these last two games. It was a quick series, but it was not a good one. Going up against one of the best teams in the National League, Red Sox dropped both games against the Atlanta Braves. Chris Sale looks great in game two. You know, that'll cause some nostalgia twinges from Red Sox fans, but we'll get into that later on. Right now, we're going to do what we usually do. We're going to break down our bottom five. So we usually do a bottom five or top five, depending on how the series goes. This is obviously a bottom five series, even though it was just two games, but not a great two games from a lot of these guys on this list. So I actually am in the leadoff spot for the first time in a while. So we're going to get right into it. And Willier Abreu comes in at number five. Very, very quiet series from him. And it's disappointing because Willier Abreu was a guy that, you know, we kept talking about him the last couple of weeks. Like, you don't mind the Alex Verdugo trade because he's just emerged. He's emerged as an everyday right fielder. He's making good defensive plays out in right field. He's swinging the bat. He's taking walks. He's looking like he's really rounding into an everyday major leaguer, but he was so quiet in this series. It's basically 0-4. He did draw a couple walks, but he didn't do much. And he's hitting out of, you know, the sort of the top half of that order. It's not like he's hitting 7th, 8th, or 9th. He's in that top 6. So clearly Cora and the Red Sox brass is counting on him to catalyze the offense, and he didn't do it this series. So, you know, the Braves are a tough team. They've got tough pitching, and Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale is a tough combo for Abreu to face. So I can't fault him too much because you're going up against Lopez, who the Braves have somehow reinvented. They've like discovered whatever the White Sox weren't doing right, the Braves discovered what is the right thing to do. And they've kind of reinvented him, and they've turned him into another great starting pitcher again, which is what he came up as. And then Chris Sale, who, you know, when he's healthy and he's on, this is what he does. So, you know, Red Sox don't say, well, you know, he didn't do it for us. He was never healthy. Exactly. Yeah. Now he's healthy. So that's just kind of, you know, that's the sucky part of it. But Abreu was too quiet in the series. You need him to do a little bit more, just get that offense going with so many guys out of this lineup. And not just that, but you've got guys coming into the lineup who are brand new. Guys like Garrett Cooper, guys like Vaughn Grissom, who, yes, he was very good in his rehab starts, but he's just now getting back up to the speed of major league pitching. So, you know, Willie Abreu has to keep doing what he has been doing for the last couple of weeks. And this series, he just didn't have it. So tough two games for him. I don't think that it's going to be, you know, a long-term issue for him, but, you know, it's something that definitely didn't help them this series. So, Chris, I'll start it with you. What are your thoughts on Willie Abreu these last two games?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. It was disappointing. You know, the way he was hitting the ball, as I'd say, like the last 2 or 3 weeks, I really expected a lot of him coming into the series. He seemed to be hot coming in. But to go 0 for 7 with 4 Ks, in which one of them was with runners in scoring position, especially the way that the series just broke, was disappointing. You know, we got our butts kicked when you combine both games. But yesterday, for the most part, was a close game. And we were right in it until the 8th inning. So, I mean, to have those at-bats kind of just look all over the place, not really have that eye that he's had in the strike zone as far as when being at the plate, it's disappointing for sure.
Terry?
It's a little concerning to see that many strikeouts there, especially with a guy who has a propensity to walk as much as he did. And he did draw 2, and those were his 2 times on base. Currently hitting at a 276, 368 clip. And just not a great series. And like Jason said, he was up against 2 borderline elite pitchers. I would say Chris Sale is definitely elite. Lopez, you know, he's, as a starter, you know, this is really, you know, one of the first seasons they've really committed to that, you know, after spending the bulk of his career as a reliever. But, you know, I think we just got to chalk it up to just not a great series. We will be facing some decent pitching here against the Washington Nationals. So we'll see if he'll bounce back there. I'm totally convinced. I'm 1,000% convinced that Willie Abreu is a bona fide major leaguer. It's just, where is the ceiling for him? And I still have a feeling it could be insanely high, higher than anybody could have foreseen when we acquired him 2 years ago. So hopefully he'll get it back. We've already faced the easy part of the schedule. It's only going to get harder from here. So if he can face that stiffer pitching and kind of regain that momentum he's had throughout much of this season, then can't help but be encouraged. I always think of it like, whose jersey do I want? Right now, my number one choice is Duran, but I'm scared to death. He could be trade bait. And I know that sounds insane, but we got nothing but lefties coming up in the pipeline. And we can't keep them all. So, but Duran and then Abreu might be my second choice. I don't know.
Honestly, Terry, the safest bet at this point might be Rafaela because of that extension.
Oh, it would be.
It's so funny you say that, too, because, you know, my wife and I and our 2 kids, we try to make a Fenway trip at least once a year. And my kids are at the age now where it's get them their own jersey. And I was faced with that exact question this offseason, prepping for the trip this year. I'm like, what jersey should I get them? You know, Devers, it's like, do I really want to go Devers route, even though it's probably the safest? But, like, I wanted to get them someone young. I ended up getting us all our own jersey with our last name on it because none of us are going to get traded. And we can wear it. It'll kind of be fun. But it does also kind of show the state of our franchise, right? Like, I don't even know what jersey to buy for my kids. Like, what's a safe pick? Who's even worthy of spending the hard-earned money right now? So it's a great point.
I would say not Rafaela. Oh, who was it that I was going to suggest? Oh, Bayo is extremely safe. You could go with him. but there's just not a lot of sexy names. You don't want to get a Wong jersey because the catching position is open to interpretation long term, with Teal not being too far away. You're definitely not going to get a Cooper jersey. or a Romy Gonzalez jersey. But anyway, let's just get back on the tracks.
No, I was going to say, the best thing I did was I bought the City Connects jersey, and I bought number 2, and that was when Xander Bogaerts was still here. Then he left, and it was Justin Turner. I thought, this is great. Justin Turner is a badass, and now it's Dominic Smith. So I don't know how I feel about that. But at the very least, even if it's not a player, I hope at some point they retire Jerry Remy's number, and it can be a Jerry Remy jersey. So I'd recommend getting a number 2 white home jersey. Just, you can't go wrong with that, because hopefully they'll retire Remy's number at some point. Otherwise, my suggestion would actually be Connor Wong, number 12, because, you know, it's number 12. It's, I think Wong will be here for a little bit. It's, you know, there's a Brady connection too, if you want to play that angle. I don't know. I think that's a safe bet.
To me, number 12 is Mike Napoli. That's like the first name I think of when I hear number 12. But
see, I'm different. I think of Mark Bellhorn. Mark Bellhorn is my number 12. I know Napoli was great, but Bellhorn in that 2004 World Series was dynamite. So,
hey, listen, both are world champs. That's all that counts.
Exactly. Yeah. So number 12, not a bad one to go for. If you get the home white, just get the home white with the no name on the back. Number 12, number 2. I don't think you can go wrong.
It's fair.
I think Brock Holt had to give up his number to someone. Or he didn't have to, but he did. And then he ended up taking number 12 because it was Napoli's number.
I think he was 22. I think he gave it up to Porcello.
No, I think I know what it was. It was number 26. That's what it was. Oh. And then Boggs, they retired it. What it was.
Yeah, you might be right on that, Terry. I actually do think I do vaguely remember that.
Yeah, he had to switch numbers. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And
so wait, was Holt wearing 12 when he hit for the cycle against the Yanks?
He would have been at that point.
Would have been, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started on the Wade Boggs number retirement. Gross.
All right, so 12 it is.
Yeah, right. Yep. So with that, we will move on to one of the members of the outfield who underperformed in these two games and has been underperforming for a while. So, Chris, who do you have coming in at number 4 on the bottom 5?
Yeah, I've got Tyler O'Neill. It's a rough series for Tyler. He went 1-for-8 at the plate with 3 strikeouts, in which all 3 strikeouts, there was runners in scoring position. And they were all in pivotal moments both the first game and today. So, you know, I look at Tyler O'Neill last week, and it looks like he's got about 10 strikeouts. And, I mean, listen, we all know at one point during the season early on, it looked like Tyler O'Neill was projecting to hit like 86 home runs. We all knew it wasn't going to happen, but the guy was tearing the cover off the ball. And I think the concern for us Red Sox fans, like with the signing, was like, how long until this guy gets hurt? And then he has the concussion, and you go, oh, here we go. It's only about 3 weeks into the season. And he comes back, he was still hitting the ball, and then all of a sudden he's swinging at pitches outside the strike zone, especially like high fastballs. And they were just feeding him stuff that he just could not catch up on. And I don't know. I'm starting to get concerned because, listen, he's taking a pivotal spot for us right now. And I know we're paying him bargain money in comparison to what it could be in that position. But with some of the other injuries and some of the infield depth and the maneuvers and moves that we've had to make, we really don't have an answer there without, you know, creating another hole, if you will. So what are your thoughts, Terry?
I was the biggest pessimist on O'Neill for a number of reasons. I hated the trade as soon as it happened. And I remember a friend of mine, I didn't even see it. It was a Facebook friend of mine that sent it to me. And I'm like, are you serious? Did that just happen? We have Tyler O'Neill now. And it was just a bad sign because we wanted Jason wanted Teoscar Hernandez. I wanted Lourdes Gurriel. You know, we had the bar set so much higher than Tyler O'Neill. And He hasn't really gotten hurt yet. I'm not going to lump the concussion thing into that category. It was super minor. It was just an unfortunate thing. But, I mean, he's a career 235 hitter, thereabouts, 240. I mean, that's what he's regressing to. And while Connor Wong has stepped up, and his numbers will come down to earth, but he's still going to have very good numbers by the end of the year, I would say. Rafaela, as a right-handed hitter, he's no longer in the automatic out category. I still have concerns with the strikeouts and all that, but he's on a coming into tonight. Did he get a hit? He did. So he's got a 7 or 8 game hitting streak going. So suddenly, I mean, it's not overly critical that, you know, O'Neill's production is robust, but he is a heart of the order bat right now. So we do need him to step it up. And as this pitching kind of comes down to earth, I think Pivetta, you know, barring a setback, you know, he's going to kind of get back into form. And, you know, but at the same time, I mean, this, I don't think this pitching staff is going to be top 3 or 4 for long. It might be serviceable, and we know we can turn to certain guys to fill in gaps as other guys may, you know, go on the injured list for a few weeks. But you know, we need the team firing on all cylinders. We need the offense firing on all cylinders. You need your heart of the order guys firing on all cylinders. And right now, as Chris was mentioning, O'Neill is sputtering. And when you look at the strikeout problem we have, and the Red Sox, let me pull it up right now. I'm still almost positive we are leading all of MLB in strikeouts. I got it right here. No, we slipped. So the Mariners have overtaken us by 15 strikeouts. The Red Sox are number 2. But, you know, there's a few key guys that, you know, are a big problem for that. And O'Neill is one of them. Duran is one of them. And Abreu, the guy we were talking about earlier, he's creeping up. I think he's 4th or 5th on the team as far as strikeouts go. So you need O'Neill to step it up. And unfortunately, he's not that guy. He was that guy for 1 year out of 6 in his career. So we're putting guys in positions, you know, to where it's not really sustainable for them based on their career numbers. So that's just where we're at. And it sucks that we're there. Remember, what's his name? Duvall last year got off to that blazing hot start, and he legitimately got hurt. But I mean, O'Neill got off to a hot start and has kind of sputtered.
So the good news in terms of O'Neill is that you gave up nothing to get him. You gave up that bum Nick Robertson, who I don't even think is with St. Louis anymore. I think even they got rid of him. You gave up nothing to get him. So it was a flyer. He doesn't have an expensive contract. He's kind of, you know, he's a guy that is looking to get his next big contract. He's looking to kind of do what Hunter Renfroe did, like, you know, just make it somewhere and then, okay, let me get my next big one somewhere else. So that's the good news. The bad news is your roster is so poorly constructed that Alex Cora has no choice but to hit him 3rd in your lineup. That's how desperate he is for offense, that he goes, Tyler O'Neill has had a great start to the season. Alex Cora is no dummy. He knows what we know. We've been watching Tyler O'Neill as long as Alex Cora has. He looks at him and goes, this guy's streaky. He's going to strike out a lot. Yes, he has a lot of power in his bat when he runs into one, but he's streaky. He'll strike out a lot. And we're going to go through slumps like this where he's just not hitting. He's not making contact, and he's not doing anything really all that valuable at the plate. But I have no choice but to hit him 3rd, especially these last 2 games where Rob Refsnyder is hurt. And I feel crazy saying that because Rob Refsnyder is, to me, just a super utility guy. But he's been off to such a hot start this season that I honestly think if he was healthy today, or if he was healthy in the last game, he would have hit third and O'Neill would have hit fifth. I think that's what Cora wants to do. He's just trying to ride the hot bat. But with Refsnyder out, it's like, I've got to put O'Neill in the third spot and I've got to put Vaughn Grissom fifth. So Devers has no protection. And you saw that in the Chris Sale game. Chris Sale looked at, you know, Rafael Devers coming up with two runners on. And he's like, oh, Vaughn Grissom's behind you? Okay, yeah. I'm just going to throw a bunch of junk because I know that you're desperate to do something and you're going to chase a bad pitch. And Devers did. He chased a bad fastball out and away, chopped it for, you know, what should have been a double play, but it was just one out. But Sale was not worried. He's like, yeah, no, Vaughn Grissom's coming up. I'm going to punch this guy out. I know what to do with this guy. So O'Neill slumping right now is coming at a really bad time because you just have too many bats out of that lineup that O'Neill can't hide. And I think that's why O'Neill was off to such a hot start, because he was able to hide a little bit. He was sort of back in the order, and like Casas was off to a good start and Duran was off to a red hot start. He's cooled down a bit. You know, it's just when you hit him third, your lineup gets exposed. And especially pitchers like Atlanta has that can punch you out, they're going to go after that. They know O'Neill is a punch-out machine. So I worry a lot about, like, what's going to happen going forward when the Red Sox face, you know, these tougher teams that have better pitching staffs that can actually punch guys out. Because it's cute when O'Neill is going off against, like, Oakland and, you know, all these other bum teams that the Red Sox face in April and the early part of May. But when you're going up against Atlanta, Houston, even though Houston's been off to a bad start, but like the Yankees eventually, like when you face the iron of your league, your lineup's going to get exposed. So it's tough because like Tyler O'Neill is who he is. This is not a mystery. Like he's been in the league long enough. We know he's a strikeout machine. We know he's inconsistent. We know he's injury prone. But it's one of those things where I think Alex Cora is just almost begging him, like, please step up and do something. Please step up and have, like, a career year. Because otherwise, your offense is down to Duran and Devers and Connor Wong running into one every now and then. That's it. That's all you got. So it's a little bit... It's another damnation of the roster construction that like Tyler O'Neill should never be a number three hitter. He should be five or six. That's who he is. And the fact that he has to hit number three right now. And again, as I said, if it wasn't him, it would have been Rob Refsnyder. That's where you're at in terms of right-handed production bats in your lineup. That's not good enough. So as much as I'm a little bit down on O'Neill, I still put it on roster construction, you know, at the foremost.
I mentioned in the last show, you look back through the last 20 years or so, and who do you think of when you think of 3-4 hitters? You know, you've got Manny, you've got Poppy, you've got Kevin Youkilis, you know, hit in those spots at times. Mike Lowell probably a little bit further down, but JD Martinez, another guy, and Devers now for the last several years. Like Rob Refsnyder's making $1.5 million and he's a heart of the order bat. I mean, that's a problem right now. When I was mentioning that with O'Neill, your only true heart of the order guy is Devers. And we can complain about the protection, but for the first week and a half, however long Trevor Story was even in the lineup, he was the guy hitting behind Devers, which was dumb. You've got an automatic strikeout behind Devers. Like Alex Cora just does not seem to have any inkling on how to protect Devers in that lineup. And it sucks that Casas is a lefty. I'm not a big fan of hitting them back to back when they're both in there and healthy, because eventually the bullpen's gonna mess with that. You got to split them no matter what. And I'll say this, though. Cora batted Devers fourth today, and I kind of like that because starting, what, 5 or 6 years ago, the new trend was you have to start your best hitter second. For some reason, the metrics always supported that. We won 4 championships not doing that. So I'm not a subscriber to that. But getting back to O'Neill, it sucks. And we're like Ref Snyder, we're putting them in positions that they're not supposed to be.
Yeah, 100%. And you can see he's pressing at the plate a little bit. So it's hard to like really rag on him too much. I mean, the guy just, you know, had a near concussion, just got back into the lineup, and he's been asked to do a lot. But still, unfortunately, we have no choice. We need to ask more. And that's what sucks about the way the roster is. So hopefully he picks it up a little bit. But with that, we'll move on to number 3 on our bottom 5. We're going to move to the pitching side of things. So, Terry, who do we got coming in at number 3?
That is going to be Justin Slayton as I drop the ball here and not getting to him. So he was essentially the setup man in the 8th inning of game 1. It was a tie game 2-2 when he came in. And a lot of people were on social media were complaining, you know, oh, you know, he's not an 8th inning guy. And Chris Martin, I thought he was probably going on the injured list, but he pitched tonight. So, you know, I guess last night could have been a spot for him if he was healthy enough to pitch just 24 hours later. But having said that, Slayton's been one of your more consistent, one of your best relievers since the start of the season. In Garrett Whitlock-like fashion, he's just kind of been a revelation as a reliever in his rookie year. Both were Rule 5 guys, and even after kind of blowing it there in the 8th inning, he still has a 1.80 earned run average. So still numbers across the board look pretty good, but he comes into the 8th, like I said, walks Ozzie Albies, who I thought was hurt, but apparently wasn't a long-term thing. So walks Albies, a single to Austin Riley, one of the more underappreciated power bats in MLB, just kind of gets lost in that robust lineup there. But so he's got the first two on, strikes out Matt Olson, a single to Marcell Ozuna, who just murdered us the whole series, it felt like. That brought in Albies, and then later on in the inning, he did get a force out, but it drove in a run, and 2 runs came in, and can't remember if it was on the pre-show or in the intro, but Chris was essentially saying 2 runs is insurmountable the way we're hitting. It's hard to make that up at that stage of the game, and that's exactly it. So not the best outing for Slayton, but I don't blame Cora for putting him there. I mean, he pretty high on the trust tree, based on how he's been pitching, and you know, you're putting a rookie pitcher in against a lineup that is just riddled with Hall of Famers, and it didn't go his way.
Chris.
Yeah, I don't want to rag on him because at the end of the day, yeah, like the walk and the hits killed us. But to your point, and like I said in the opener before we even started the show, like right now we're at a point with this team where 2 runs is just insurmountable. He was unfortunately the guy who just gave him up. You know, the 2 pitchers that came in before him, I think Bernardino and Weissert, both of them didn't have great control. I don't even think either one of them had 60% strikes on the pitches they threw. So they even looked shaky. They just were able to get out of any jams that they were in. Unfortunately, Slayton couldn't. I think where it's disappointing is there was a lot of people high on Slayton coming into the series to start off the year. I think, Jason, you pointed out before the show, a lot of people talking about like rookie of the year and whatnot. And it's only May at this, as you said, and he showed his true colors at this point. Right. And that might not even be a fair statement, but it just says there's someone that someone's going to break the back, and it just happened to be Slayton. There's really not much more I could even say on it. It's disappointing because that was the game that we were in. And it's funny, going into the series, I thought the exact opposite. I thought somehow we would have a chance to have it at the chance of the game that Sale started. I didn't know what to expect. Him coming in against the Sox, and Lopez just looked unbelievable coming into the series, but we were right in it in a tie game. So it's unfortunate. Your thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, I'm not going to hammer Slayton too hard. I still like him. I liked him in spring. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know much about him. Really showed out. I'm glad he made the roster. He's been very solid so far, and better than solid, actually. I think it's just this week he ran into one of the best lineups in baseball, which that's going to happen. And I still think going forward, I'm intrigued to see what he will do. I think his numbers will regress to the mean a little bit, which is fine. That's okay. That doesn't mean he's going to suck, right? Like, he's a Rule 5 guy. Like, he's been unbelievable to start. If he ends the year with an ERA under 3, I'm good with that. Like, that's great, you know, for any guy in your bullpen. So he had a tough outing here, but I don't read too much into it. My whole thing is I want to send a message to who I call the guys at the kids' table of Red Sox fans, the footy pajama Red Sox fans. Can we stop comparing him to Mason Miller out there in Oakland? Can we stop that now? Like, please, let's stop. Mason Miller has a negative FIP, which I didn't think was possible. And if you want to look up how that's possible on your own time, go ahead. I did it today. It almost gave me a possible headache. But basically, it's just the guy punches people out and he doesn't give up home runs or hits. So Mason Miller is one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball right now. It sucks that he's in Oakland, but he's there. But the amount of people that were like tweeting out this week, you know, Slayton should be a rookie of the year candidate. And, you know, it's been a while since a reliever has won rookie of the year, but it is possible. Like, would you all stop? Like, just stop. He's not going to win rookie of the year. He might have a very good rookie season, and I hope he does, but he's not Mason Miller. He's not the next, you know, Oral Hershiser or whatever else you want to compare him to. He's just a good, solid Rule 5 pickup. And he's going to have hiccups like this. It's okay. It's going to happen. He's going up against one of the best lineups in baseball, a lineup that is much better than yours. And he's going to get hammered a little bit. It's okay. Like, again, just the desperation of Red Sox fans these days to just grasp at anything. Just like, oh, Slayton, yeah, oh yeah, rookie of the year, next Koji, like all this. Like, I saw so many things on Twitter this week about him that pissed me off, that I don't want to say I was rooting for him to have a bad outing. Obviously, I'm not. But when he did, I was sort of like, eh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, of course. Because you're all saying, oh, he's the Mason Miller of the Red Sox. No, he isn't. He's good. He's very, very good. And you know what? He should stay in the bullpen, and he should develop there, and he'll have a good year. But can we please just pump the brakes? Like, some of you Red Sox fans, and you know who I'm talking about. Terry, I know who you know who I'm talking about. Like, just, oh, you know, let's bring up the early rookie of the year candidates in May, on May 8th. Like, really, guys? We're going to do that? Like, he's...
Matty Cakes, is that it?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't... Oh, okay. I don't follow him anymore, but...
Yeah.
But his kind of crew, yeah. Matty Cakes, Eddie, you know, all those guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I yeah. see where yeah. you're going now.
Yes. Let's do some rankings. Yeah, like just all that bull crap. Like, no, he's good. He's good. I'm happy he's up here. I do like him, but let's be realistic about what he is. He's a Rule 5 reliever. Don't expect him to be your next, like, savior. He's good, but pump the brakes a little bit is what I would say.
I don't need him to be Mason Miller. I kind of need him to be John Schreiber, and I'm good with that.
Yep.
Who's having a very good year with the Royals, by the way.
Oh yeah, that was worthwhile getting rid of him. That was a smart move. Yeah.
I forgot what did we even get for him? I don't even remember.
Nobody knows except for dorks who think that all these
bag of balls.
That's all we got. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Oh no, we got that David Sandlin, who's getting lit up right now. I covered this a few shows ago. I'm getting my trades mixed up, but that is who it was.
Basically, we got back a guy who the same people who, when we got Franchy Cordero, told you that Franchy Cordero could hit 40 home runs as a Red Sox.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The next Edwin
Encarnacion. The Shanghai Red Sox.
Exactly. Yeah. Even then, I don't know. So with that, we'll move on to the offensive side again. So coming in at number two on our bottom five, Chris, what do we got?
Yeah, I hate to say it. Rafael Devers, he had a rough two games. And I think what the shocking part was is he got off to such a hot start for May. And I know we're only a little bit over a weekend, right? But he had 5 hits and 14 at-bats, home run, 5 RBI. So, like, it looked like he was going to start to turn around. He was hitting the cover off the ball. Came into the series. It's a little bit deceiving because he did go 2 for 8. But, again, 3 strikeouts, 2 of them with runners in scoring position, and a weak fly-out pop-up in the infield with runners in scoring position. And, you know, you made the point already, Jason, in tonight's game against Chris Sale. Like, if you had me bet on anyone that was going to know Chris Sale and be able to have quality at bats, I'm thinking it's going to be Devers. He played with him for a bunch of years. He should know all of his tricks. Chris Sale basically rolled the ball to the plate, and he's swinging at it like it's like he's on a golf tournament with no protection. To your point, like, Sale knows Grissom's right behind him. There's no protection there. And you would think Devers should know that, right? Like, I got to have quality at bat here and really work him. And he didn't. So it's just super disappointing. You know, I was having this conversation the other day with Andres, one of the other YouTubers for this channel now. And there's just moments where you're waiting for Devers to just be this leader presence, which by now we all know he's not going to be, which just hope. But there's no Bogarts here to put his hands on his shoulders when he's in these moments. And, I mean, he's still got a lot of years on this contract. So if you don't give him protection and we don't get a real leader in there, I know Rob Refsnyder's now been voted the vocal leadership of the Boston Red Sox, which just shows where we are as a franchise at this point. I'm scared for Devers because how many more of these seasons or starts or finishes are we going to see where he gets into these slumps or – he can't carry it, and does he lose that mojo that he had in the lineup when he was that quality, like, protection for most guys? What are your thoughts, Jason?
So, I was disappointed in Devers' series as well, and you mentioned how Chris Sale just completely dominated him at the plate. The bigger, more alarming at-bat to me was when he faced Ronaldo Lopez for the first time, and he swung at a pitch that literally it looked like Lopez slipped on the mound and spiked the ball unintentionally. Like, it was that bad of a pitch, and Devers just feebly waved at it and then just like, oh, okay, yeah, that was strike three. Okay. Just walked away. Like, he still doesn't seem right to me. I don't know if the shoulder is still bothering him a little bit or if it's just the whole situation and here's what bothered me about him. So I liked him last year and in the offseason when he was saying, hey, like, ownership, you know, we need help here. Like, let's get some players in here. To Bresel's credit, and you may not like the players he's brought in, but, you know, he had injuries come up. He brought in Garrett Cooper. He brought in Dominic Smith. You know, he brought in Zach Short was short-lived, you know, pardon the pun. But he did try. And even Devers is still kind of complaining about it. And he's sort of saying, like, well, you know, look at the roster. Look at what we're, you know, like, I forget when he made those comments. I think it was like before the Braves series, maybe on Sunday or Monday. But it just seems like Devers is never happy with the way the team is. And I don't fully blame him. So, again, like, I supported him last year because, you know, the way that they handled the deadline and all that, I completely agreed with him. But this year, it's like, it's not like you guys are in last place. If they were in last place and they were tanking, I would 100% be on board. Be like, yeah, no, you're right. They screw up the offseason. These additions are enough. You're in third place and you're over 500. And you were well over 500 going into the Atlanta Braves series. So you have something to play for. So at the end of the day, it's like with Devers, I kind of go, are you going to keep talking, or are you going to turn into the formidable left-handed power threat out of the four spot that you should be? Because so far, we haven't seen that. All I see is, you know, bad swings and misses, horrible strikeouts, you're missing time because of injury, and you're making weak ground balls with runners in scoring position against a guy that you should have a book on. So at this point, like, my sympathy level is changing on Devers, where I'm going, okay, last year I felt bad for you. Now you're the leader of this team, or you should be. And you don't have to be a vocal leader. You don't have to be, you know, Mr. Rah-Rah giving speeches every day, but just go out there and lead by performance. And I don't think he's doing it. And with this many guys on the injured list, he has to be the guy to do that. Because it can't be Tyler O'Neill hitting home runs every day. It can't be Connor Wong, you know, hitting a two-run bong and playing great defensive catcher. Like, as great as that is, it has to be Devers. And I just haven't seen that yet. So I'm kind of worried about his leadership quality as a guy that you just gave this massive contract extension to. Like, your team is in a rough spot with that many guys on the IL, but in terms of standing-wise, I mean, I said at the beginning of the show, you're in third place. They're only 5.5 out of first place. They're not, like, it's not even the middle of May. You're still in it. You're not, like, completely out of it. You're hanging in there with all these injuries. And Devers just kind of going out there, like, giving these sort of I don't give an F at bats. Like, it's disappointing to see. So I just need more from him. You know, I don't need him to necessarily go 4-for-4 with two home runs every day. But just show me that you give a crap. Because right now, the give a crap meter on Devers is pretty low. And that's very concerning for a guy who has the biggest contract on the team and who is supposed to be the next leader. As many people have said, he could be the next David Ortiz. Okay, David Ortiz was a leader. Like him or not, and, you know, he had some moments where his tantrums were a little too much, you know, destroying the phone and the dugout and all that stuff, but he was a leader, and guys listened to him. Devers, I'm waiting for that sort of maturation of, like, are you going to get there? Is it going to be this year or not? Because if it's not, then I don't think they're going very far. So that's my big concern with Devers. Terry, what do you think?
So I just pulled up a random lineup from 2019. I think it's March 10th, 2019. We beat the Mariners 14-1. And I'm looking at this lineup. You had Andrew Benintendi leading off, who is still a very good player at that point. You know, the power kind of disappeared, but I think everybody just assumed it would come back and he'd be a very productive top of the order guy in the 1 or 2 hole. Benintendi was 3-for-5 that game. Mookie Betts, for some reason, was hitting second. You know, he was typically the leadoff guy, but Mookie Betts was in that lineup. JD Martinez batted third. Mitch Moreland, a very underrated cleanup guy against righties, was hitting fourth. Bogaerts fifth. And then Rafi Devers batting sixth. This isn't that Red Sox team anymore. You know, that's what he's used to. That's what he came up. He was called up in July of 2017. And we basically led the division all year. Cruised into the playoffs, but unfortunately we're up against the Astros, who were really hot and really shady, as we later found out with the trash cans and all that. But he hit an inside the park home run in one of those playoff games against the Astros. And, you know, and then his first full season, I technically don't believe he was a rookie at that point due to exceeding the at-bats the season before. But in his first full season, 2018, we win 108 games in the regular season. So this is Rafi Devers' introduction to the big leagues. like most kids from the Dominican Republic dream of ascending to at some point. And he didn't end up with the Kansas City Royals. He ended up with the Boston Red Sox, you know? And so after that season, 2018, we've made the playoffs one time, 2021, and that's it. And in the lineup, let's see, I always do this on game one. So he had Duran hitting in front of him, which is fine. O'Neill behind him, then Abreu, then Grissom. It's like a bunch of guys who shouldn't be hitting that close to him in that part of the order. So I don't blame him for being frustrated. And I don't know if it's a lack of motivation or just a lack of focus. Like, to me, it would be hard to focus under these circumstances. It really would. And it's been a strange year. He had the knee scare where we all thought, oh, he tore something. only to find out, oh, he's in the lineup one night later. And the shoulder thing, and it's really hard to make of any of this. And unfortunately, I don't see a big splash coming this winter. He's going to have to be patient and wait for Marcelo Meyer to come up and Roman Anthony, who probably won't be protecting him because those are two lefties. How are you even going to fill out that lineup? Like, Devers is going to have to hit second again because you're going to need Casas fourth. How do you fill out that lineup? I don't know. It's such a wonky team, and, you know, with the guys we have in the pipeline, it's tough to see how it's all going to fit. But finally, getting back to this series, he wasn't focused against Chris Sale. He didn't go into that with a mindset of, I'm Rafi Devers, I'm one of the most feared hitters in Major League Baseball. He should have just went in there with all the patience in the world. And if he worked a walk and didn't get anything, fine, take your walk. Don't look stupid at the plate and strand base runners. At least pass it to the next guy. If the bases are loaded, you know, if he goes to first and the bases are loaded, Sale has to pitch to whoever's hitting behind him. Has to pitch to him. Lopez, I meant, in game one. But still, not a great series. And I don't know what's really in store for the rest of the year. His numbers, though, aren't that bad. You know, he's hitting .289 with a .405 on base. The shoulder makes me wonder, you know, is he going to hit 30 home runs this year? Maybe it's going to be more doubles than anything. It's hard to tell, but he wasn't his normal clutch self in a couple of big spots here.
Well, and that's the thing, is I think his numbers are somewhat misleading. When you look at his RBIs and his, like, home runs and his when he's really hitting for power this year, it's in when we're already up by 4 or 5 runs or in a situation where there's no one on base. And that's not Rafael Devers. You know, you made a good point, Terry. You look at his at-bats against Lopez and even Sale tonight. Like, that's what I would have expected from rookie Rafael Devers. But rookie Rafael Devers is hitting 103-mile-an-hour fastballs into the bullpen at Yankee Stadium against, like, the most feared closer at that point. So it's just, it's sad. It really is at this point.
I think what annoys me is that I'm still seeing, you mentioned, like, rookie Rafael Devers. So, like, I remember when he came up, even like the year or two after, he would have some just really bad at bats where he was just swinging out of his ass. Like, you could tell, like, he was just going for the downs every swing, and you go, okay, he's a young kid. Like, I get it. He's got power. He wants to show it off. Fine. But, dude, he's 26, 27 now. Like, he just got this big contract. Like, you have to have professional at-bats, especially when you're in the four hole. Like, you can't just be going up there swinging at the first thing you see. And that's what he's still doing. So that's the concerning part for me is, like, did they invest in a guy who's just kind of, you know, I don't know, just all for the downs or nothing? Or is he, you know, is he hurt? Like, I hope it's just that, like, between the knee and the shoulder, he's just not feeling himself. And I don't know. Part of me wished that when he had the knee thing, they just put him on the IL for 10 days. Just, you know, go away for 10 days, get healthy, and then we'll, because, like, he missed 4 or 5 games anyway. It's like, that seemed kind of useless. So maybe he needs a you know, phantom IL stint, do one of these. Oh, you know, we'll put him on the IL retroactive to this date, so it's really only, like, 6 or 7 days. I don't know what it is, but he doesn't seem right. And this offense and this lineup, the way it's constructed, you can't have Rafi Devers being a black hole in your lineup right now. So we'll see how it goes. Again, they got Washington coming up. They've got some pretty decent pitching. You know, don't sleep on the Nationals. Their rebuild's going better than yours is. So so it might be a little tough weekend for him, but hopefully he snaps out of it. We'll see. So with that, we'll round out the show with number one on our bottom five. Terry, you're taking us home. What do we got?
Well, we couldn't decide if we're going to put this on Pivetta or Breslow, but Pivetta just got destroyed with the long ball. And one of them was, the first one was a little unfortunate because it looked like they had turned a double play. The players came off the field. Brian Snitker reviewed it. And turns out the runner was safe. I think he gave up. I can't remember if it was a hit or a walk after that. And then was it Osuna that came up and just absolutely destroyed it? I think it was. Okay. Full disclosure, I'm in the Braves market, so I had to listen to it. I couldn't. I have the MLB package. Luckily, that's the only blackout I have down here is the Braves. If you live in the mid-Atlantic, you're not seeing Baltimore games. You're not seeing Nationals games. There might be another team in there that you can't watch as well. But yeah, so it was 3-0, and then Arcia hit one in the very next at-bat, and then I think Osuna got him again later on. And his rehab outing did not go super great. I mean, the biggest thing that came out of it was he seemed to be healthy. So that was encouraging, but he had 3 or 4 walks, gave up 3 or 4 runs. And this was in Pawtucket or Worcester rather. So my thought when I saw that line from his rehab start was you're getting nothing but quality out of your spot starters, whether it's Criswell starting, whether it's Winkowski starting, or whether it's a bullpen game with a guy like Bernardino coming out. And all of those games, the starting pitchers or the openers gave the Red Sox a good chance to win. And we did win some of them. And the games that we didn't win were very low scoring, where the pitching staff only gave up maybe 3 or 4 runs and the offense just didn't show up. So when you're kind of rolling like that, and that could be an anomaly, you know, being that successful with those types of starts. But when you're rolling like that and you can kind of afford to give a guy like Pivetta another rehab start, take advantage of it. Take advantage of it. This Sunday, Bayo's going to go out there and I'm going to have to do a deep dive before we do the national show to see how they've been playing as of late, but there's a couple of tough pitching matchups in there. And I don't know that maybe Bayo doesn't need another rehab start, cause his was very similar to Pivetta's, where got slapped around a little bit, only lasted 2 2/3. So you're probably not going to get a lot of depth out of Bayo this weekend. I'd say 5 innings max. And he does struggle with being efficient. So might only be 4 innings. And I don't see why we're calling these guys up early. And I can't think of a worse situation to put Pivetta in. He's up against a guy who's white hot and Chris Sale. Sale's only had 1 bad start the whole season. It was against the Marlins of all teams. And, you know, you got one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball. And that's even with Acuña slumping. Acuña's hitting .232 against the fastball right now. It was almost 100 points higher the year prior. So even with a slumping Acuna, that's a murderous lineup that I probably wouldn't have put Pivetta in. I wouldn't have started him there. So, you know, and you had two off days this week, Monday and Thursday. So there was plenty of room for flexibility. And Pivetta just got lit up. I'm not blaming him. You know, his final line, he only lasted 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned, only walked one, but only struck out one as well. So the one thing I'm going to be watching for is the next few days. I mean, he's probably going to have a side session in 2 or 3 days. Does he throw that side session? Because these stressful outings, you know, if you're nursing an injury, I mean, this type of a start is stressful and, you know, could lead to a lot of wear and tear. So hopefully we don't get any reports of his next start being in jeopardy. And when would that be? That must be against Tampa coming up. We got a 4-game set, and they've won 5 in a row, by the way. So might be catching them at the wrong time.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different things that were disappointing to it. The fact that he only had one strikeout, the 4 innings pitch, not getting real good length out of him, low level of efficiency, although he did throw 67% of his pitches for strikes. That was somewhat encouraging. And I'm going to try and find a little bit of positivity. The margin, and this is, just speaks to the margin of error for this team, right, in this season. And I almost feel like this start might be a microcosm of what we can expect for this season. He got it to 2 outs twice, right? And in one case, it had to be overturned by the umps on a call. Otherwise, we're out of that inning. But he doesn't, and he gives up back-to-back home runs. Game's already out of reach now with 4 runs. And then he gives up another home run with 2 outs. So all of his runs were with 2 outs. So, I mean, you could say, like, he almost got out of it. And, like, what does it look like if he does for this team, for himself? Like, how many more innings could he have gone? And I'm fearful that that's what we can come to expect now from this team, right, is where the margin for error is very small. We almost get out of it, but, like, how quickly do things start to turn around when you don't, right? And now all of a sudden the season, to your point, Jason, where there was hope, we were over 500 by 3-5 games as much as last week, turns into 5 under, and then now you got nothing to play for, because 5 under with this team, with the way it's looking, it could be insurmountable at some point. What's your thoughts, Jason?
So the timing of Pivetta coming back against the Braves, which, as you mentioned, Terry, like, yeah, let's bring this guy off the IL and have him face one of the best lineups in baseball. That's a good, you know, soft landing for a guy. But that combined with Bayo coming back on Sunday, supposedly. So that coupled with Andrew Bailey going on Tom Caron's new podcast, that he does with Alex Speer, which I forget what it's called. I just call it the Sunshine Red Sox podcast because I never remember the name of it. But, and essentially their first topic in their first episode was, what's with all the pitcher injuries in baseball? It can't just be related to a change in usage of pitch, can it? Let's have Andrew Bailey on to discuss. Okay. So already we're seeing the Andrew Bailey defense crew led by Tom Caron and Alex Speer. Alex Speer, who works for the Globe, who's owned by John Henry, and Tom Caron, who is, you know, like, has Red Sox logo beaming out of his ass. So we've got that podcast with the, oh no, it's not the change in pitch usage. It's got to be something else. Nick Pivetta, who's never been on the IL in his career, suddenly gets hurt. But no, it's coincidence. Nothing to see here. And then his first start back, he gets roughed up. Like, I just think, I've said this for a while, I'm not down on Andrew Bailey and his new pitching philosophy, but I do worry that there are certain guys that it's not going to work for. And Pivetta, you know, at first it looked great. He looked really good. He had a good spring, sure. But he is throwing the breaking ball more than he ever used to. And he gets hurt. He gets a flexor strain. He goes on the IL. For a start back, he's not himself. Doesn't look quite like himself. Brian Bayo gets hurt. And honestly, Bayo, the first half of the season, or, you know, first couple of starts, didn't look very good. Didn't look like himself. Garrett Whitlock, although that may be more of a Whitlock issue, already gets hurt. But then there's a flip side of Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford look like Cy Young candidates. So there's a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde with Andrew Bailey's pitching philosophy going on, but I'm a little bit worried about Pivetta. I worried that, like, you know, the change in philosophy and what he's being asked to do at his stage of his career, he's thrown a lot of innings. And we call him Mr. Reliable. He throws, you know, he makes 30-plus starts years and years in a row, doesn't get hurt. All of a sudden, now he gets a new pitching coach in who's bringing in a new philosophy, and he gets hurt. Goes on the IL, and first start back doesn't look good. So there is that aspect where I just kind of look at it from a different angle. I go, is it a Pivetta thing, or is it the new programs maybe not working for him specifically?
It's not a one-size-fits-all, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Like, for some guys, it works great. For Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, it's, you know, it's working like gangbusters. Those guys look like Cy Young candidates. But Bayo hasn't taken that step forward. It's early. I know it's only May, but hasn't taken that step forward. Garrett Whitlock got hurt again. Again, you can chalk that up to just him being Garrett Whitlock and getting hurt, you know, when he steps on a Lego and going on the IL. And then Nick Pivetta, who looks good in the spring, looks good in his first couple of starts, and then, boom, goes on the IL out of nowhere when he never has before. So, yeah, it's sort of that I don't know just yet. I don't know what the verdict is on it, but you can tell the Red Sox PR is already trying to put out the fire. Like, nope, it's not Andrew Bailey. Nothing to see here. Nope, not him. No, he's a genius. No, it's just got to be something else. It's not him. So, I don't know. Keep in mind, too, like, the Nick Pivetta of old would have starts like this, where he just wasn't that sharp, wasn't getting the punch outs, gave up a couple of homers, and just, you know, kind of put your team on the back burner. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, we appreciate Nick Pivetta for his ability to post, his ability to stay healthy and give us 30 starts. But at the end of the day, look at his career. That's who he is. He's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde pitcher. He can strike out 10 guys over seven innings one day, and then the next day only lasts four innings, gives up a couple homers, and, you know, he's done. So maybe it's just Nick Pivetta being who he's always been. Time remains to, you know, to tell what that is, because we're only in early May. He just got off the IL this week. So, you know, I want to see him make a few more starts and see if it's really the pitching program or if it's him or if it's kind of a combination of both. But certainly not what the Red Sox were hoping for. His first start off the IL, like, especially coming off a loss, you'd hope that he'd come in and, like, kind of stabilize things, maybe shut down that lineup a little bit, give you a chance, but it didn't happen. And you got Bayo coming off the IL on Sunday. You can only hope that he looks good or he looks better than he has, but I don't know. I mean, I think there's still a lot of questions to raise about that new pitching program, whether or not it's really the difference maker that people say it is, or whether it's just, like you said, it's not a one size fits all. Some guys it works, some guys it doesn't make a difference. And maybe Pivetta is just going to regress to where he's always been. You know, the guy who got removed from the rotation last year because he was so ineffective. So, you know, that's something that Red Sox fans have to keep in mind, that, like, this is a guy that, you know, lost his job at one point. You know, he can give you 30 starts, he can give you a lot of innings, but they're not always quality. And sometimes he can lose you some games. So maybe that's what this was this week.
Well, I think we're going to get our answer, Jason, because from what I understand, when the Sportsology group is done doing their audit, when they look at strength conditioning and maybe even the pitching department, we can identify maybe it is Andrew Bailey's system not working. So stay tuned.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about those guys. Yeah. No, we'll see what they determine, you know. We did a whole episode on them last week, and geez, I still have a lot of doubts, but.
Pivetta is a guy where, you know, I know they want to get away from the fastballs, and as a pitching staff, we're only throwing 30% four-seamers, like, collectively as a group. Pivetta, like, he needs his fastball, and he's only sitting at 96 or 97, so, I mean, it's not like that's reckless. Like, he shouldn't, you know, those type of guys aren't blowing out their elbows, and Pivetta, I mean, he's got a smooth delivery for the most part. I mean, he's not like, I worry a little bit about Cutter Crawford. And by the way, his velocity was down 2 or 3 miles an hour. All other metrics looked really good, but his velo was down. But he's got a funky delivery. Hauk, I worry about him. Bayo had a flexor strain last year, so, you know, I worry about him a little bit. Pavetta's never really been a guy I've worried about. You know, he's got a rubber arm. And so hopefully they'll take a second look on, you know, how they, you know, plan for him to, you know, execute his starts and see where they go from there.
Yeah, it's a great point about Pavetta. His fastball is his favorite pitch, and it should be. He's got a really good fastball. He's got a plus fastball. So uses that to set up his breaking stuff, and that's kind of been his formula. So are they changing him too much? You know, that's definitely a question that has to be asked. So we'll ask it here. Tom Karen and Alex Spear won't, but we will. So so if you want more answers or questions about that, then stay tuned to us for sure. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Keep an eye out for another episode of Clown Takes coming your way on Friday. We got some interesting candidates this week. A couple of different guys we're going to be going after, so keep an eye on that. We'll also give our series prediction show about the Washington Nationals series coming up this weekend. So should be an interesting one. The Nationals are actually hanging in there. They're not too bad this year. They're third place in the NL East right now, I believe. So pretty interesting team coming in. So keep an eye out for that as well. And the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap everything. So have a great weekend, and we will talk to you all later. Take care.